This is The Guardian.
Yesterday, we told you how the British motorcycle brand Norton became a vehicle for a multi-million pound pension scam. Today, the investigation continues.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
In our last episode, we left you in 2015 with the Chancellor George Osborne singing the praises of the rebirth of Norton, this great British manufacturer.
Yeah, British economy motoring ahead.
The one which was bought using money from a tax fraud and which had raised funds through a £10 million pension scam.
Beautiful piece of engineering, isn't it? Mm.
At that moment in time, Norton seemed to be on top of the world.
It was really nice to be asked to be an export champion.
In 2018, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, brought Norton boss Stuart Garner along on a private jet to trade talks in China.
We've had great help from government to be able to get through some of those barriers and move on and grow our exports.
And as recently as December 2018, we had the Brexit Secretary himself, Steve Barclay, at the Norton factory too.
Great to be with Norton today. Great business, great brand, great example of the potential we have as we deliver this deal.
All along, this was a company that, to the outside world, looked fantastic. A great British success story. But that was only half the story.
There were these two Nortons. There's the one presented to the world, to the politicians, to the investors, about this brilliant brand that was being reintroduced to the world and was going to become this great British exporter. And then there's the other side, the other Norton, the one that was really happening behind the scenes. It was a company that was secretly in crisis. The auditors for the company, Norton's own auditors, had refused to sign off the accounts because it was in such a state. The company was falling apart.
British motorbike firm Norton has gone into administration. Founded in 1898, Norton is one of the last remaining British motorcycle brands and best known for its involvement in motorsport.
Around a year after the Brexit Secretary's visit, Norton went into administration, meaning that hundreds of people who had invested their pensions in the company faced the possibility of losing their life savings. And for The Guardian's Simon Goodley, this opened up a whole new angle to his investigation.
There were always nagging and unanswered questions about how this was allowed to happen, how the authorities stood by and seemingly did nothing, despite numerous opportunities to intervene over the years, why so many senior ministers were allowed to turn up and promote this company and authenticate all of Garner's stories. And also, really intriguingly for me, is Stuart Garner himself. His story is sort of littered with business failures that worked out not so badly for him, but pretty badly for others. And the nagging question is, was Stuart Garner a serially bad businessman? Or was there more to it than that? Was he actually dishonest?
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, The Great British Motorcycle Scam, Part 2. Okay, Simon, you've just mentioned this idea of there being two Nortons, the one being projected to the outside world, and then the real one behind closed doors. Let's begin with the first one, Norton as it appeared in the public eye. Now, Garner ran Norton from a place in the East Midlands of England called Castle Donnington. Can you take me there and into his world?
Well, strangely enough, he's quite a mysterious figure. We don't know loads about him. Even though he loved to appear on TV interviews or in promotional material for Norton, when you watch any of that, he's basically trying to sell something.
When's the book coming out?
Hey, I've got a title. It's funny you should say that. Birds, Bangs, Bikes.
Are you doing one?
I've scratched some notes, yeah. So Birds is my gamekeeping, Bangs is my fireworks, and Bikes is Norton.
But he has done occasional interviews that do give you a bit more of an insight into who he is, or at least who he wants people to think he is. So I would say he kind of sells himself as a bit of a man of action. He can't live without his Swiss Army knife, which he carries around with him just in case. And the other thing you get from Garner in these interviews is that he's quite keen to sell himself as a successful entrepreneur, kind of living the dream as a self-made man. So he talks about his 3,500-acre game reserve in South Africa, where he likes to fly out to breed antelope and chill out by the pool, which, by the way, he says is next door to Bill Gates' estate. And, of course, his other property is, as you've said, Donnington Hall, and is incredibly opulent. So it's this 200-year-old Grade II listed country estate with beautiful grand staircases and chandeliers. The walls are decorated with hunting trophies, the heads of zebras and stags, and Garner's personal collection of Victorian oil paintings. And then outside the property sort of were Garner's fleet of Aston Martin cars. And this is basically where he ran the Norton business from, even setting up a factory literally in the grounds of this country estate.
Wow. So he's not exactly subtle then, is he? And so Norton is being amped up by government and it's being run out of this quite magnificent headquarters. Did the bikes live up to the hype? And was this a business that was thriving?
Well, they were kind of like a mirror image of the man himself. So they look fantastic. I mean, you see some of the pictures. And I mean, as somebody who's not even into motorcycles, I'm not taken with these machines. But you look at them and you think, wow. I mean, they looked amazing on the pictures. But this business was not ready. There was trouble with sourcing all the parts because the industry didn't exist in the UK and these were supposed to be completely British motorcycles. They weren't actually that well funded, so they couldn't really invest in lots of staff or lots of equipment. There was all sorts of problems just with not being a properly set up and funded business, and they were cobbling orders together in effect. And of course, the flip side of that is if it's taking you so long to actually fulfill the few orders that you've got, you know from the outside, and common sense tells you that there was very little income actually coming into this company.
Apart from pension money, lots of it. Neil, the retired binman and ageing rocker we heard from yesterday, he was just one of around 200 people that was scammed into investing their life savings into Norton, who were told that they could do this tax-free, when they actually couldn't. Overall, £10 million of people's pension money came into the company that way. Another of them was Robert Dewar. His daughter is Sally Holmes.
He didn't miss a sports day. He didn't miss an event. He bought us breakfast in bed every morning because he was soft like that. I could talk to him about anything and everything. He loved to talk.
Robert was a successful businessman. He had built a company doing commercial property rentals in Chelmsford in Essex. At the age of 44, Robert was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
So in the beginning, it was slow the deterioration. I would just notice that he started using a stick occasionally. Maybe as I was, he'd come and visit me at university, and he started with just a slight limp, and he went from walking with a stick to using a wheelchair occasionally, and then, and then deteriorated further.
As Robert became less able to run the business and Sally's mum began to take over and also to care for him, Robert began to think more about what would happen after he was gone.
One thing that was very important to him was making sure that my mum would be provided for financially.
And that's when the phone rang. And on the other end was Simon Colfer, the same man who'd called Neil and hundreds of others. And we know what happens next.
So I remember Dad talking to me about Norton Motorcycles and what a great company he thought it would be.
Robert invested £115,000 into Norton. And at first, he was quite happy with his investment. He was seeing the politicians endorsing Norton on TV. And maybe a little strangely with hindsight, Stuart Garner himself was actually staying in direct email contact with him, reassuring him about his investment.
Dear Robert, Norton is performing well and trading strongly in line with forecasts.
So the message from Garner was, everything is going swimmingly. A few years later, Sally left her high-powered job in the city and moved back home. She'd just had her first daughter, and her dad's illness was getting worse, so she wanted to be near him.
I just didn't know how much time I was going to be having with Dad anymore, and I wanted to make the most of that. I moved opposite him, so he couldn't get away from me.
And she wanted to help her mum and dad get on top of their finances.
Trying to jot down an order, you know, just their, you know, pensions, their insurance, things that they have, just so that we were aware, because I realised how much of the knowledge was in his head.
Sally contacted the administrator of the Norton pension, and pretty soon, alarm bells started ringing.
I made contact several times, I chased several times, and suddenly their phone line stopped working.
Then one day, the police get in touch, saying they've launched a fraud investigation into Simon Colfer, the man who had sold them the scheme. And then it really was panic stations. But the police said, we're only investigating the way the money was transferred, the pension liberation scam, not the pension itself. And, by implication, not Stuart Garner.
In fact, I actually spoke to the officer on the phone one day, and I was reassured personally on the phone that this was a legitimate pension scheme.
Even with that reassurance, they wanted out.
November 2017, the forms went in.
And this is where the real battle began.
So from November 2017 onwards, I think I started to chase monthly.
A month passes by. The money doesn't come.
This is a email from Stuart from December 2017. When in response to me asking if the pension was in fact actually a scam. He said, the pension is absolutely not a scam, and the good news is your father's pension is safe and being professionally looked after. And it was at this point when I was getting nowhere, where I then started reaching out to various different organisations. I make first contact with the pension ombudsman. I've called HMRC. I phone the pension regulator. I start an official complaints process.
The months keep rolling by and the money is nowhere to be seen. Sally feels like she's hit a brick wall.
It was a complete yo-yo of emotions because I would oscillate between thinking we'd been scammed and lost all the money to being reassured that we weren't and the money was on the way. So it was so up and down, a very frustrating period. At the same time, personally, it was a very difficult time with my dad deteriorating in front of our eyes. We needed the money more than ever, more than when we actually first thought we needed it. Now we needed it. He needed full-time, round-the-clock care.
Even as Stuart Garner continued to reassure Robert and Sally, by now, they knew something was seriously wrong, and they were terrified that their money had gone. But there was no way for them to actually know what had really been going on inside Norton. Now, as part of this new investigation for Today in Focus, Simon has seen some of the company's bank statements from August 2012 to May 2013, the crucial period when Robert and the other investors' money was first coming in.
So the way to read a company statement like this is to look at money coming in on one side and money going out on the other. And what became clear was that there were strange things happening on both sides of that equation. So usually the majority of the income into a company's bank account is sales, fairly obviously. But in this case, the majority of the money going into the Norton account was actually pension savings. So the money that Robert Duer and Neil and all those other people had saved to pay for their retirements. There's actually very little money coming in from actually selling motorbikes. So Norton's business was effectively just receiving pension money. And then on the other side of the ledger, you might raise an eyebrow when you see what Robert and Neil's money was actually being spent on.
What was it being spent on?
So they were told that their money was to be used to grow Norton for the long term. That was the specific phrase that was used. So, you know, you think of things like new machinery or an investment in a factory or anything like that, long-term investments that are going to make Norton a better business over the years to come. But what we actually see is a range of expenses that are just cash flowing the business, in the jargon. So salaries, legal fees, stuff that just keep the company going day to day. And then combined with those, there are other expenses that are really hard to think of good explanations for. So, for example, that financial year, there was a £40,000 loan from Norton's account directly to Stuart Garner. There was £12,000 of cash withdrawn from ATMs, which is slightly curious. There were payments to Manchester United's ticket office. And there was more than £300,000 that was transferred out of Norton's bank account to a company called Alpha Cash, which appears to be a cryptocurrency trading website.
So you said there that there was very little money coming into the company from motorbike sales. But do we know how many bikes they were actually selling at that point?
Well, we've got an idea. The company never said, but we have seen industry figures which suggest that there were very few bikes being sold at this time or in the subsequent years. So in 2012, which is the start of the bank statements we've seen, for that year, the industry figure suggests that just 40 motorbikes were sold by Norton, 45 in 2013.
It's not a lot of bikes.
It's not a lot of bikes. It's not a proper business at that point.
So Stuart Garner, when he's talking to Sally, is saying things like, your dad's pension money is safe and it's being professionally looked after. But you've seen these documents that show that actually, by that point, he'd spent the money years ago on salaries and cash withdrawals and Man United tickets and cryptocurrency. And as these documents are something you've only recently seen, presumably Sally had never seen them before either. How did she react when you showed them to her?
She was flabbergasted.
So there's no sales. Why did nobody ask where the sales were for the business? I'm absolutely speechless.
Sorry, it's a daft question, but I'd like to hear your answer. How does that make you feel?
It's hard to even put into words, because I don't think that there was any human element involved here. I think as a human and a nice person myself, I Stuart said something, I believed him. I kept him updated of my father's health condition and why we wanted the money, so that he would understand the necessity of it, and so that he believed he was a human. And why would you not want to help someone out that was in physical discomfort and physical pain? I don't know. It's actually really hard to say the level of stress that we were under at the time. They had my parents had a mortgage that was on interest only, and we had no idea how this was going to be paid. Like, no idea. We'd taken out loans on credit cards to put hoists in the house so that my dad could stay there as long as possible. We just tried to give him the most dignified care and comfortable care that we possibly could. And I can't. Heartbroken, I suppose. It's heartbreaking, really. That's the only way I can describe it.
In the spring of 2019, there was a small breakthrough. One of the regulators Sally complained to, the pension ombudsman, ruled that Stuart Garner had to pay the pension money back, something he was legally required to do anyway. The ombudsman said that Robert had suffered exceptional distress and ordered £5,000 in additional compensation. Not long after, Robert died. Sally sent Stuart Garner one more email.
This was 2 weeks after my dad had died. I think I was angry. Dear Stuart, my father chose to take his pension out of a safe and reliable pension scheme because he believed in you, your company, and your vision. To say that you have let him down is an understatement. To you, he may be just one person, but to us, he was our world. I hope that one day you truly feel the ramifications of your actions and the impacts you have had on innocent people's lives. He didn't respond to that one. No.
Eventually, in January 2020, bailiffs went to look for Stuart Garner at Donington Hall. They managed to get a bank transfer for just over £3,000, a tiny fraction of the amount Garner actually owed Robert's family. The very same day, Norton Motorcycles went into administration.
And that was probably the first time I really started to accept that all the money was gone.
To this day, Sally and her mum haven't received any further money from Stuart Garner or Norton Motorcycles, nor have the vast majority of the more than 200 people who transferred their life savings to the company. For Sally, there's one conversation with her dad that still sticks in her mind.
So even at the very end, we talked about it. We talked about Norton. And actually, it was probably a week before he died. He asked me about it again. And he just used to apologise. Sorry for my mum, that he tried to, enable her, make it comfortable, and it hadn't worked out. I think he felt he had failed in that legacy he wanted to leave for her. Yeah. And the one person that should be sorry won't even admit or acknowledge it. It's just so infuriating, and it just hurts. It's hard to think that he felt responsible when he It wasn't his fault. He did what he could. He was duped. He was conned. He was scammed. Yet he's the one that's sorry. Yeah.
Coming up, was Stuart Garner a bad businessman? Or something more? Simon digs deeper into what was really going on behind the scenes at Norton Motorcycles.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Simon, the picture you've painted here is of a man who basically bought this business, became a near genius at selling a narrative around it, and one that was just too perfect not to be used and arguably developed by some of the most senior politicians in the country. This is a story of an apparently self-made man reviving a heritage British institution, bringing back British manufacturing, selling it to the world, and later flying the flag for post-Brexit Britain. And all the while, there was very little substance actually behind that narrative, apart from a pension fraud and a company that was completely unable to actually manufacture their product at any scale. That in itself is just a remarkable story. But I guess the question you set out at the beginning, and something that has always been on your mind, was that what was Stuart Garner up to in all of this? Was he somebody who just thought really highly of himself and fell way short? Or was he actually dishonest in a more profound way?
Well, I think the first thing to say here is that Sally's complaint to the pension ombudsman wasn't the only one. In the end, there was around 30 separate complaints that were pulled together. And when the report finally came out, just a few weeks after Norton had actually gone into administration, it found that Stuart Garner had been dishonest in a number of ways, and it used that exact term. It said he had behaved dishonestly. So I think that we can say that he was dishonest. But I've spent really the past couple of years looking into Stuart Garner's history. And there are all sorts of examples before Norton and during Norton, some of them not even involving Norton, which raise all sorts of questions about whether this act of dishonesty was, in fact, an isolated example or not.
Of course, so what sort of things have you been finding?
Right, so just as a flavour, to start with, there were at least two examples of former business partners of Stuart Garner's who claimed that he forged their signatures on documents in order for him to raise money for Norton. Next, we sort of mentioned earlier that before Garner got into the motorcycle business, he was involved in trading fireworks. Well, one of his previous fireworks businesses also collapsed, and before the administrators arrived to see what they could salvage for those that the fireworks business owed money to, it appears that £1 million of the company's assets were suddenly taken out of the company, leaving practically nothing there to pay back the creditors. And the administrators said that they could have taken that matter to court, but in the end it just wasn't worth the legal fees.
So it sounds like a lot of questionable things were going on, some of which the authorities already seemed to know about. Were there other red flags at this point?
Well, we haven't really talked yet about the motorbikes themselves and some of the bizarre experiences customers had over the years.
My name's John Hamilton. I'm 56 years old. I think I was about 12 when I first paid for the Norton V4SS, but it seems that long ago.
So, John is a motorbike obsessive.
As with everything I do, one bike became two, became five, became 10. I think I'm up to 16 at the moment, but I can't quite remember. My worst fear is that if I die, my missus will sell them all for what I told her I paid for them.
And in 2016, he ordered a Norton, put down his deposit of £4,000, and then he waited. 3 years after he ordered, he was still waiting.
He'd been waiting so long for anything to happen with these bikes. I mean, we were always promised delivery dates that just kept getting can-kicked. I'd almost written the whole thing off. I'd almost thought, like, we're never going to see this money or the bike or anything.
Finally, after paying down the whole balance, 40-odd grand in total, it was time for him to go and collect his bike at this glitzy ceremony-type thing at Donington Hall.
I think pretty much everybody who went there on that first day was shocked by how bad the bikes looked. To be honest, that bike was a complete crock of shit. Nothing was good on it.
One of the things that John wasn't happy about was the paint job. So he took it back to the Norton factory to have it redone, which shouldn't really have been a big job.
Sat there for 3 months, nothing happened. Then they kept assuring me that the bike would be getting done before the end of the year, and it didn't. And then the next thing I know is when, basically the liquidators got in touch to say, Norton have gone bust, your bike's still here.
So John, a bit panicked, rushes to the Norton factory to get his bike.
It didn't have any wheels. It didn't have any electrics. The wiring harness had been taken off. All the panels, the fuel tank, the dash, the fairing, the brakes were gone. No seat, no lights, nothing.
So what John and other customers say was happening was that people were bringing their bikes in for repairs or servicing, and Norton was just stripping the parts, putting those parts back onto new bikes and selling them to fresh customers.
The dashboard, the digital dash that was on the bike, had a tracker in it. And I know that the dash on mine ended up in Spain.
So, Simon, we've got old companies where assets have allegedly gone missing. We've got alleged forged signatures. We've got the stripping of bike parts. What else have you found as you've revisited this story?
Okay, yep. My name is Mim Ainsco, and I was employed at the BMMA as HR, admin and payroll.
So Norton had an apprenticeship programme called the BMMA, which stands for the British Motorcycle Manufacturing Academy. Mim Ainsco was in charge of the human resources at the BMMA, so she managed the apprentices, in effect. So for one thing, Mim says that the actual training happening there was, in her words, not worth the paper it was written on.
If you were to apply for an apprenticeship in motorcycle mechanics, you would kind of expect to go in on day one and see work bays where there were sets of tools, a ramp for the bike, bikes to work on, etc., etc., you know, computers to do your exams on. That wasn't the case. I mean, it was an empty floor.
Obviously all of this is not very good for the apprentices, but probably the most serious thing that Mim said to me was how the government funding for this charity was used. So there were government grants being provided to the charity that could be used for all sorts of things and all sorts of costs, paying for things like equipment, the costs of training people, the assessments, all that kind of thing. But they specifically could not be used to pay the wages of the apprentices.
But it was. So that's where it gets a bit sticky, because it was misappropriation of funding.
And indeed, I've seen the accounts for the charity, and they do seem to confirm what Mim is saying there. And not only that, they also suggest that they were trying to hide what they were doing.
And how did Mim feel about all of this a few years down the line now?
Well, I think that Mim is absolutely devastated about what happened there. If you bumped into Stuart Gardner now, sort of walking around along the high street or something, what would you say to him?
I don't think I could. I don't want to see him. I'd rather see him behind bars, because he's not done right by so many people. My point of view is just the apprentices, but if you think about all of the staff that were at Norton, all of the people that put money into Norton, all of the people that bought motorbikes with their life savings, with their pension money, he's ruined so many lives. And it still frustrates and angers me, because nobody has held him to account properly.
Simon, listening to everything you've told me across these two episodes, it's really hard not to agree with what Mim says there. The impact of Stuart Gardner's time at Norton is so huge. You've got the pensioners like Neil from yesterday, who is still in this debt because of the tax bill, and who now thinks he'll be working until the day he dies because he lost the rest of his savings when Norton went under. You've got 200 people who the same thing happened to, including Robert Dewar. Just imagine the horrible stress his family went through in his final years, and no doubt the similar personal stories in other families. Then you've got all the employees at Norton who lost their jobs, the apprentices who never got the training they were promised. You have government grants that were basically wasted, money which could have been spent on public services or on other proper businesses that actually might have grown the local economy. But to what extent has Stuart Gardner been held accountable for his time at Norton?
Arguably, he hasn't really been held accountable at all. I mean, he has got a criminal record now. So he was convicted of a technical pensions offence in the spring of last year, because he is not allowed, or nobody is allowed, to invest a significant portion of a pension pot, which they are the trustee of, into assets which benefit them, which clearly he did. He pleaded guilty, but he avoided prison for it. He got a suspended
prison. There was no prison sentence for this?
There was no prison sentence for it because the prosecutor, which was the pensions regulator, did not allege that Stuart Gardner behaved dishonestly in making those investments. And the judge said that was probably what tipped her into handing out a suspended sentence rather than a prison sentence.
So just to be clear, having devastated a number of lives, having been seen to have illegally used up this pension money, Stuart Gardner effectively was able to just carry on his life?
In lots of ways, yeah. He's able to go about his life. He says that he's a victim of all of this as well, and that his life has been devastated, but there are lots of people who feel that he should have been given a custodial sentence, and that didn't happen.
Simon, what do you think this whole saga says about Britain? How we weigh up what matters and what doesn't, and who matters and who doesn't?
Well, there were so many opportunities throughout the past decade for the authorities who were responsible for policing all this stuff to put a stop to it. So the pensions regulator, HMRC, the Financial Conduct Authority, all of these bodies knew about the sorts of people who were involved in these pensions and this pension scam going back around a decade. And there were multiple missed opportunities for any of those bodies to put the brakes on and to stop it all from happening. So that is kind of what is really troubling, is that there are all these different agencies, and it seems that responsibility fell between the cracks, and that nobody either A, tried to police it at the time, or B, really tried vigorously to try and prosecute anybody since they saw it had all gone wrong. And finally, I think the role of politicians in this story is deeply troubling. Their desire to seemingly grasp any photo opportunity to sort of further political causes and make glowing tributes about Norton had real life and serious impact, people were partly persuaded to hand money to Stuart Garner, or at least leave it with him, on the back of what these ministers had been saying. Ministers who had often worked for departments that already knew about Stuart Garner, Andrew Meeson, Peter Bradley and Simon Colfer. So you have to ask, where was the due diligence to prevent millions in public funds being handed to a man like Stuart Garner? And who seriously gave any thought about the harm that could be done to the pension holders? Out of all of them, only Vince Cable has acknowledged it and said that he was totally unaware that anything might be wrong. But he is the only minister to have even bothered responding to us.
Simon, you said right at the start of this that some of the people you were speaking to have now said that speaking to journalists like yourself is their last hope. What are they hoping for now? And is there a chance they'll ever see any of their money again?
Well, while we've been recording this podcast, the pension victims have received some good news. The Fraud Compensation Fund has said that they will be eligible for compensation. But we can't get too carried away with that. Firstly, the fund will only compensate what was put into the pension funds at the time, so well short of what Stuart Garner promised these funds will be worth now. And secondly, the fund will not compensate the so-called tax-free payments, the big lie that tempted the pension holders to invest in the first place. So using a very rudimentary back of a fag packet calculation on Neil's numbers, they'll get back about half of what is owed. And finally, the Fraud Compensation Fund only pays out when all other avenues of getting money back have been exhausted, which means it has to be shown that Stuart Garner cannot pay anything more. Which sounds simple, but it isn't, and it will take time. And that means that the nightmare goes on and on for the victims and continues to have serious consequences. So in Neil's case, he had planned to be long retired by now, spending time with his newborn grandchild, and he can't afford to do that until he gets a meaningful amount of money back. And for some people like Robert Dewar and Sally and her mum, it's obviously too late now. It's too late to actually make any difference in the way that they really needed it to when Robert was still alive. And so for Sally, as much as it is about the money and has been about the money and getting back what was her dad's, this quest has been about more than that. It's about justice. And even if they do see compensation, I think that lots of the victims here still feel that Stuart Garner has basically got away with this, and they won't be able to rest until they feel that he's been held properly accountable.
As a result of the issues raised in our reporting, Stephen Timms MP, chair of the Work and Pensions Committee, said he was launching an inquiry into how watchdogs and prosecutors handled the Norton case, in which £10 million of pension savings disappeared. Norton was bought out of administration by new owners in 2020 and is once again manufacturing motorcycles in the UK. We tried several times during the production of this investigation to reach Stuart Garner for comment, but so far, he hasn't responded. A spokesperson for the pension regulator said, "In our role as regulator of workplace pensions, we successfully prosecuted Stuart Garner for three serious pension-related criminal offences. Garner received an 8-month suspended jail sentence and was banned from being a company director for 3 years and ordered to pay costs. We set clear expectations of those we regulate. Where those expectations are not met, we will intervene, such as by appointing independent trustees to secure scheme funds, as we did in this case, and we are tough where we discover breaches of law." A spokesman for the Regional Organised Crime Unit for South Wales Police said, "This investigation centred on the transfer of pensions arranged by Mr Colfer and did not include an investigation into the pension funds of Norton. No assurances were given or could be given as to the finances of third-party companies by officers. The officers were not investigating the administration of the pension accounts of Norton, and officers engaging with witnesses and victims were told this." A spokesperson for HMRC said, "We do not regulate pension schemes. Schemes register with us for tax purposes only, and registration is not a form of approval. The Financial Conduct Authority did not respond to our inquiries. Vince Cable, the former business secretary, said about Norton, "I was not aware of any suggestion at the time of criminal and unethical behaviour or that there was any controversy around the company. The department was, from my experience, careful in selecting companies for me to visit and would not have engaged with Norton had any such knowledge been available to it." Theresa May, George Osborne, Stephen Barclay have not responded to our request for comment. You can read more about Simon Goodley's investigation into Norton Motorcycles online at theguardian.com. Our thanks to him, Sally Holmes, and to Neil Davis. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer was Phil Maynard. We'll be back again tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.